On the Wintrust Business Lunch, hi, it's John Williams. So the governor just spoke. We'll continue to follow that press conference and update you on what was said if you are just joining us. But they have accelerated the eligibility for people over the age of 16 in the state of Illinois, excluding Chicago. More about that in just a little bit. That doesn't happen today, but it's right around the corner. So for those of you frustrated, maybe there is still a brighter light at the end of the tunnel. Okay, so the Wintrust Business Lunch gets rolling now. Pete Zimmerman is our producer. Our first guest is Stephen Esposito, Executive Director and Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley. Visit morganstanley.com. Stephen, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
You know, that's the story in Chicago. I wonder, as more cities and states experience what we are here, if, in fact, that will continue to propel markets, portfolios, the economy.
I absolutely agree with you. I think, you know, as more good news comes about reopening the economies and letting natural course of business take hold and all the pent-up demand, yes, I think the markets are recognizing that and reacting accordingly. That's why you're seeing such a great, substantial move in cyclical companies whose stocks had just been decimated 9 months ago are now leading the market going forward.
Give me some examples of that.
Just look at anything in the cyclical world. Look at a lot of the banks. Look at retailers. You can look at the airline sectors. Look at the energy sector. Just across the board, everything affected by a reopening of the world economies would have just a positive impact. And let's face it, everybody was so dire on these companies 9 months ago.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people were caught off guard at how quickly this recovery is coming and how analysts now have to really ratchet up their earnings expectations going forward. And throw on the $3 trillion stimulus, and you really got some substantial numbers coming forward.
Yeah, that gets to maybe my next question. You mentioned pent-up demand, but you need pent-up resources too. But there is a lot of money on the sidelines and in bank accounts, right?
Oh, absolutely. You have trillions of dollars on the sidelines sitting there. People have not spent money where they traditionally spend it. And you're about to get $3 trillion coming in, which to many feels like an arbitrary number, $3 trillion. They throw that number around easily. But to put its proper perspective, that's double the GDP of France hitting the economy in the next, 90 days? Combined an economy that's already turned the corner and hitting higher and all the liquid cash on the sideline. We don't really know what it's going to do, but we know it's going to probably be bigger than we think. So I think the market's starting to realize that.
Every now and then I think of what Jared Kushner said last spring when he said that last July the market would just boom. The economy would come, quote unquote, roaring back. Two different things, the market and the economy. But he said, by golly, you watch, we're going to rebound really fast, really hard. It didn't happen, but it's starting to happen now. And I wonder if maybe for the reasons he anticipated, right, that we would get this thing under control. They were wrong about that last summer. But that as sure as we get this thing under control, I guess his message was right, but his timing was wrong. It's just automatic. The economy will come back.
Well, you know, the longer you wait, it's like holding a beach ball under the water. And it's just going to explode when you let go. So the longer we wait, the more the demand is going to build up and the desire to get out and about and go to restaurants and travel, et cetera. If you look at the travel industry, it had one of the biggest weeks it's had since pre-COVID. And there's not really any holidays going on. A lot of places are still locked down, international travel stuff. Remember, Europe's having trouble still. So once we get this whole global pandemic over with, hopefully sooner rather than later, I think there will be a huge celebration all over the planet, and the market's simply reflecting that right now, the expectations that we'll get this under control, and the markets will react, the economy will react accordingly. They're already looking at potentially double-digit GDP growth at some point.
Double-digit. I mean, I heard 6.5%, maybe 7%, maybe 8%. You think two digits, huh?
My opinion is that they're going to surprise to the upside. You remember the doom and gloom just 1 year ago, and it was rightfully realized, you know, the doom and gloom and all the people and the panic that occurred and the death and destruction was horrible. But the rebound here could be substantial. And investors, we have to be cautious because we don't know. But again, $3 trillion going to an economy that's already recovering, you can imagine what's going to happen with automobile sales and just everything out there, clothing sales. That's why you're seeing it reflected in stock prices. The belief is this economy will come back with a vengeance and potentially just substantially do better than anybody expects. Remember, we've never seen this before.
Yeah. Is it possible for the markets to come on too strong, too fast? I mean, do you worry that another day, another record on the Dow?
Yeah, I think the indexes are seeing something underneath the surface. The indexes really don't reflect the broad market as they used to. A lot of it, you know, because of market cap weighting. You're having a stealth bull market underneath, while you're seeing many of the traditional, the FANG stocks have been trading sideways since September. And many of the other companies that have been story stocks, as we'll call them, that ran up because of the pandemic, they were benefiting, are now starting to come down hard. What you're seeing is a rotation into companies, in the cyclical space, where the earnings expectations are simply too low. It's hard for analysts to calculate what $3 trillion additional will do to an economy when we've never seen it before.
But I am glad to hear you say that the FANGs are not what's making this happen, right? Because that always made me nervous. That's five stocks. I would like to think that it had, as you used the word broader just now, a broader base.
Absolutely. You know, actually, underneath the surface, if you take out many of the high-flying technology names, which at one point 80% of the performance of the S&P 500 was 20 stocks, then you look at the rest of the market, which is thousands of companies that don't participate at all. Now those companies are moving higher underneath the surface, and they're not being reflected in the indices. So you do have a stealth bull market going on in financials, energy. Healthcare has still been lagging, starting to gain. The retailers, the automobiles. And I think a lot of those, you know, specifically, I can't get into specifics, but I think there's more room because the earnings expectations, again, even on estimates, the P ratios are pretty reasonable in many of these names. But if those continue to ratchet up and they keep raising their guidance and expectations as the economy actually opens, you can see more and more money heading there because, frankly, everybody under-owned that sector. And that's a sector that really has the greatest potential for growth in terms of earnings per share and revenue going forward.
Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director over at Morgan Stanley. The website's morganstanley.com. All right, Stephen, well done. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Ian Schur joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch from CNET. You can visit CNET.com. Hi, Ian. Welcome back.
How you doing?
I saw a story about Zoom anxiety on CNET and elsewhere. What is that, and why are you guys writing about it?
Yeah, there's a lot of research now going into why we're all kind of, those of us who are working from home, are rather mentally exhausted at the end of the day. And it's easy to say, oh, it's the pandemic, oh, it's this or that. But one of the things that researchers are starting to notice is that Zoom plays a big part of this, and, you know, video chat in general. And they wanted to figure out why. And what they found was that the mental load that you're going through when you're on video chat is actually far higher than when you're in a normal meeting with someone. Part of that is because the screen is right there, right? It's right in front of you. Whereas in a normal situation, you're across a desk or across a room. So there's less kind of in-your-faceness, right? So one of the things that they came out with is kind of these recommendations for how to make it less of a kind of a stress on you. So, for example, turning off the self-view is probably a big one, right, where you see yourself. Because even though you may not be looking at it, let's just all be honest for a moment. We all take a look a little bit to make sure, you know, everything in the background looks good. Maybe our hair is not crazy. And that even when you put it to the corner, your brain's thinking about it. So turning that off really helps. The same thing, by the way, can help you when you're looking at a group. You know, one of the things that Zoom does is it automatically shows you the person talking in a big screen, but you can also turn on grid view, which is kind of like the Brady Bunch view, right? And by doing that, your brain actually takes in a little less information. You're less stressed out by it. And a lot of that comes down to trying to figure out the social signals, right? Like when you're in the same room with someone, you can see them fidget or move around. You can't see that on Zoom. And so we spend a lot of time looking for that in our brains. Again, this is all, you know, we don't know it, but this is what we're doing. So by trying to kind of reduce what you're looking at, oddly enough, really helps.
Well, I'm glad you're saying that. I know people that are teaching, and the anxiety, the energy that goes into teaching over a computer really is taking a mental toll on them. And
yeah, it's super tough. And I mean, you know, when we wrote about it on CNET, we're thinking mostly about office workers, but, you know, imagine how much harder it is with kids, right? Who already have attention issues just because of the nature of their age. And these are all things that I think we're going to have to try and figure out how to get through. You know, we don't have kind of social rules for how we do video chat right now. Like, you know, before the pandemic, most of the research I found showed that most people only wanted to video chat with five people in their life, and those were all part of their family, nobody else. And so now that we've all been kind of thrust into this new world, and I'm sure video chat will not go away once we're done with the pandemic, I think we need to start learning how to make it work for all of us and make it something that doesn't, you know, emotionally and kind of mentally exhaust us the way it does right now.
I want to ask you about some other things, but I'll just say this in part, and that is that I think the lingering effects of the year of isolation, now that we're coming out, are starting to surface. And and just because we're coming out doesn't mean we're better now. I think you and I and mental health professionals and moms and dads and cousins and teachers and parents all need to pay attention to how well we are now that we're out. We're not the same as when we went in. Yeah. Apple Maps can help you find a COVID-19 vaccine. Could have used this a few months ago, but I'll take it when I can get it.
I feel you. So for a lot of us, I think, you know, even if we're not eligible for the vaccine yet, one of the things you probably have heard about is that a lot of the people who are eligible, who are not healthcare workers, right, the people who are elderly and whatnot, it's really a patchwork, tough system to get a vaccine shot. You know, a lot of them either have to stand in line for a long time, or they have to get on a, you know, on a website, and they have to keep hitting refresh a million times and hope to get their appointment. And so one of the things that is happening now is that the federal government's working on a website to hopefully make it a lot easier to set up your appointment wherever you are in the country, instead of relying on the patchwork of different states we have now. But also, Apple and Facebook have built in information into their apps to help you identify where there are vaccines nearby you, because you may not know, especially now that the government's partnered with a bunch of drugstores and whatnot, there are actually a lot of locations that could be just down the street that have the vaccine. And if you're eligible, you could just, you know, call and go. So one of the things you do is you type in COVID-19 vaccine into Apple Maps or into Facebook, and it'll show you a list of all the ones nearby. It'll give you the address, it'll give you the phone number and the website, and you can kind of try and set your appointment from there. Unfortunately, you can't set your appointment from within the app because, you know, it's still a patchwork of systems, but it's a good kind of first step before we get the government one in May sometime.
I'm typing in COVID-19 testing, search nearby, and I didn't know that would happen. Look at that.
Yeah, pretty nifty, huh?
And you're right. Okay, that's tantalizing. It doesn't mean I can walk in and get one, but at least I know where. And there's other COVID-19 pre-populated words. No, thanks for the heads up on that. Talk to me about Justice League. Why did Jennifer Bissett write about that?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a movie that came out several years ago and was considered a flop, right? And one of the things that was really interesting is that, you know, Justice League, the movie, there's a whole contingent of people online who believe that the original director, who had to leave the project halfway through, was robbed of a good film. And this has happened before, by the way. But oddly enough, the Superman films in the 70s, Richard Donner, the original director, a lot of people feel he was robbed from making the second one better. And so actually, he redid it. Well, the same thing is happening here. Zack Snyder, the original director, has worked with HBO for a reported $70 million to redo the film and to create his own version, which launches today. It is 4 hours long, and it is just taking over the internet in terms of conversation because, you know, there was a lot of disappointment in the original Justice League movie, and it kind of hurt Warner Brothers' chances of, you know, building a kind of Disney Marvel machine. And so this is something that HBO thinks, hey, maybe we can get that kind of attention again. So it'll be interesting.
I got to have HBO Max. I may. I don't even know. but I could watch that right now?
You can watch it right now. And yeah, HBO Max, this is the other part of it, is the streaming wars, right? Everyone wants to have a reason for you to sign up for their services. So HBO Max, when it launched during the holidays, they had Wonder Woman 1984 come out on Christmas. Disney had Mulan, and then they had the Soul movie, and they also had the Mandalorian from Star Wars. They're all trying to set themselves apart because they realize you're not going to sign up to all of them, right? So they want that piece of your wallet before someone else gets it.
Ian Scher from CNET has made your life better today, hasn't he? Okay. And as always, thank you, Ian. Nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. Take care.
Visit CNET.com. So many ways people began eating during the pandemic. And what's it going to be like on the other side now? Food delivered. You pick it up at the curb. You cook it at home. Maybe it's pre-cooked. Maybe you're doing traditional groceries. On a phone line right now is Ravi Ayelaraju. He is the founder of Meal Village. Meal Village. .com is the website. Ravi, thanks for joining us on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing good, John. Thanks for having me.
So tell me how you stand out. You are doing are you delivering it or am I picking it up at your place, bringing it home and preparing the food?
Yeah, we are a full delivery service. The way we work is we have a commercial kitchen in Lyle, in one of the Chicago suburbs. From here, we cook fresh and nutritious meals every day. And then we deliver directly to our customers' homes or offices, anywhere in at least 90 zip codes around Chicago at this time.
Is this then food that I'm going to eat right now or today, or is it frozen food that I'll eat all week long?
No, this is completely fresh food. We cook within the last 24 hours before by the time we deliver. And then once you get the food, you just have to heat for a couple of minutes in the microwave or in the oven a little longer, and then you can consume. Or you can, some of the customers, they take this food and then they freeze it for a few more days, consumption at a later day.
How long have you been in business, Ravi?
We started our business in 2016. At that time, we were just have two items on our menu. We started in Naperville, and then we slowly expanded in the last 5 years. And with the COVID, we really have grown to more than 90 zip codes in the last 12 months itself.
All right, so I'll put you on the COVID was good for me side of the ledger board here. Some businesses were able to prosper, some were not. But you, I guess because people weren't eating in restaurants, found that people wanted somebody else to cook the food, huh?
Yeah, it's a two-way thing for us, because when we actually started, our key demographic is busy working families living in suburbs who don't have time to cook. And with the kids' activities and work schedules, daily commute. So that's how we started the business. And what happened is once customers know about us and the kind of food we offer, they started promoting through their parents and grandparents that they care for. That's how we got into the living senior segment. And luckily, that helped us a lot with the COVID. But at the same time, when actually the COVID happened in March timeframe, we actually have seen a dip in our business because a lot of working families stayed home with a lot of their time. They opted for cooking as a means to engage with the families. But it took us like a couple of months to figure this out, and then we started marketing to seniors. As a small business, what happens is when you have so much unknown and uncertainty with the health and all the virus impact, we were a little bit hesitant to go after in a full force, but it took us a few months to figure this out. Yes, we can safely cook and deliver even in this pandemic. So since then, I think somewhere around June, July timeframe, we started seeing pickup in our business. And that's been good for us so far. Thank God.
What's the best seller? What have folks eaten up?
Yeah, we serve traditional American comfort food. That's our positioning, and that's what we're going to continue. Our standard popular sellers are everyday home-cooked meals such as a pot roast, meatloaf, spaghetti and meatballs, chicken parmesan, pan-roasted salmon, things like that. They are very popular. And we are planning to stick with those to give an experience of home-cooked meal to our consumers. And especially seniors love those things.
Yeah, people who aren't seniors love those things too, I'll add. I mean, I'm kind of hungry right now, and you just said five beautiful things. So that menu lineup sounds really smart. Traditional American food in the breadbasket of the United States sounds perfect. One last thing then, how do people just go online and order it? Do they order a meal at a time? Do they do it in bulk?
Yeah, so our ordering is very straightforward and simple. You have two different ways to order. One is online. You can just go online and place an order through your phone or computer. Or you can also call us. That's mainly for a lot of living alone seniors. They mm-hmm. call us. We have wonderful customer service representatives in Lyle. They will walk you through the menu, what we have to offer. And you can place the order that way. And one interesting thing is our menu changes daily with 10 different categories, starting from breakfast all the way to dinner, salads, and soups. That makes it a lot of options for people to choose from. And then we allow both advance ordering. You can order in advance up to 5 days, or you can also order on the same day. We understand people. Some people plan ahead. Some people have a last-minute changes to their plans or last-minute orders, so we offer both. Being local here, we can accommodate both sides for ordering at this time.
MealVillage.com is the website, MealVillage.com, or call 888-610-2232, 888-610-2232, MealVillage.com. Ravi, good for you. Good luck, and thanks for joining us today.
Great. Thank you, John. Thanks for your time, and have a nice rest of the day.
Yeah, you do too. Ravi Ayala-Raju is the founder of Meal Village. It's 12:43. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, and the business news continues now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Google's preparing to add thousands of new jobs in Chicago and other cities this year. The company is building out office space in Chicago's Fulton Market District and made the jobs announcement without specifying how many of those positions will be based there. Google's plan is to add 10,000 employees nationwide, with 1,000 of the new hires spread across Chicago, New York, and Washington. The company is investing $7 billion in office and data centers across the U.S. Accenture Midwest has announced plans to hire 150 mothers at its Chicago office. The company is trying to address the loss of women in the workforce caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. A group called the Mom Project is partnering with Accenture to help make those new hires. The Mom Project connects mothers returning to work with jobs. Accenture provides technology, business, and management consulting. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now we check the agribusiness scene. Here's Steve Alexander.
I'm really hungry after that last interview, John.
Me too.
Thanks a lot.
He said meatloaf. I thought, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, well, let's keep that food talk going, shall we? I bet there are some Midwest dairy farmers who are really happy to hear what a Southside woman's all-time favorite food is.
Ooh, macaroni and cheese, the creamy kind, homemade, not out of the box.
You probably recognize the voice of Michelle Obama. She's the executive producer and co-star of a Netflix show aimed at getting kids to eat healthier and explore new kinds of food, which can often be a hard sell. She knows. When her girls were young, Mom and Dad decided to eliminate processed foods from their diets, but Malia didn't want to give up her mac and cheese from the box.
We said, look, if you can turn a real block of cheese into this powdered cheese that's in the box, then you can have it. So she spent a good 3 hours at the stove, and she just couldn't do it. Because guess what? The powder in the box isn't real food.
Score one for Mom and Dad. The series, Waffles and Mochi, continues her mission of getting kids to eat better. And Waffles and Mochi are the names of puppets who, well, I'll let Michelle tell you.
Well, first, there's the age-old problem that if you talk to your kids about eating healthy, they think it must not taste very good. Waffles and Mochi help with that by following their curiosity and their taste buds to some delicious new flavors. These two will help get kids excited about exploring in the kitchen. And we know that getting in the habit of cooking and eating nutritious meals together from an early age can have really positive lifelong effects.
She's well aware that cooking healthy isn't always easy.
Parents are up against a lot. but we hope to share some simple recipes showing that cooking at home doesn't have to be complicated. And when we do it together, we can have fun. And we eat better, too.
The Waffles and Mochi, available now on Netflix. Today is National Sloppy Joe Day. Is that healthy? A stronger dollar is one of the reasons commodities at the Chicago Board of Trade are lower today. Beans are down about 17 cents. Corn and wheat are each off about 8 cents. At the Merck, hogs are 50 cents higher. Live cattle and feeder cattle are off $2. That's your money on 720 WGN.
12:51 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy Guth joins us to talk about... Here's a headline for you. Americans are buying real clothes again. What were we wearing before, and what does this even mean?
Yeah, so what we saw during stay-home orders were a lot of people were buying leisure wear. They were buying yoga pants and pajama bottoms and sweatpants and things like that. A lot of retailers were reporting that pretty much across the board. And what we're seeing right now is that retailers are beginning to shift a little bit and say, hey, people are actually starting to buy other stuff. Madewell and Anthropologie both noticed that they were seeing a resurgence in dresses. And Bonobos reported more suits and dress shirts and even some tuxedos. And other retailers have been noticing, you know, trendy tops that you would go out in, jeans, resort wear, swimsuits, things like that. They're seeing an uptick in that. So some industry watchers are saying, hey, maybe this is people sort of getting ready for, hey, when it's safe to do so, we're going to travel, we're going to go back out in the world. But people, perhaps this is a hint that people are starting to be thinking that way, which I think a lot of economists have been kind of wondering about. I think that's the big question from everything from you know, airlines to clothes here, right? About what's going to happen, how quickly are things going to bounce back? And it seems like people are suiting up to be back out in the world soon.
IRS is postponing. We wondered if they were going to do this, but tax day has moved, right?
Yes, it has. So last year we saw this. It was a much bigger postponement last year. This year you have an extra month. So instead of April 15th, now you have May 17th. They just announced that yesterday. They're hoping that this just helps people out. There was a statement they put out that said, this continues to be a tough time for many people. The IRS wants to continue to do everything possible to help taxpayers navigate the unusual circumstances related to the pandemic. So, you know, there's kind of the same mindset as last year, but just a little bit shorter window. But still, you know, I think everybody's kind of balancing a lot. The lines between work and work and home time are a little blurred still. So I think that's, I'm sure, welcome news for a lot of people.
What are you seeing with Boeing these days?
Yeah, you know, Boeing continues to be in the headlines. And so, you know, what we really got from the 737 MAX crisis when that plane was grounded after two fatal crashes was a real conversation about how the FAA and Boeing work together to certify planes for airworthiness. And that's still in the process of kind of being worked out. What had been happening was the final piece of it, the FAA would sort of delegate that to Boeing to sort of self-certify. And a lot of that was revoked. And so it's all about this certificate of airworthiness. They're called ACs casually in the business. The FAA has retained the right to do their own AC. So they're going to do inspections on some 787 Dreamliners in particular. They didn't specify what the production issues were, but they have alluded to there being some production issues. They've also pulled back and retained the rights to do these inspections to issue the certificate of airworthiness on some of the 737 MAXs. We saw that happening earlier. That's not a surprise so much. But the 787 Dreamliner, until we kind of know more about what these production issues are, I think that has even more questions kind of swirling up. You know, when we saw this happen for the other aircraft, it was around some whistleblowers that had said, hey, there's tools and debris and even, you know, rags and some like little pieces of metal filings kind of being left in the aircraft after production because we're on such a tight deadline. So we will wait and see, but here's, you know, another layer of kind of this ongoing woes with Boeing. And tensions have really mounted between Boeing and the FAA because of this certification process. That will be a really, I think, important thing to watch.
Amazon is getting into the healthcare business?
Yeah, I mean, you know, why not? They're in everything else. You know, what's one more thing?
Yeah.
So they're making their kind of their first steps into this, and they're providing healthcare services for employers. This is rolling out in Washington State, but it will be available more widely soon. Essentially, this is called Amazon Care. It's an app that will connect. If you're an employer, it would connect your workers with doctors and nurse practitioners virtually, and then nurses who can do like in-home stuff. Like if you need blood work, a nurse can come to your house and do that. They can. There can also be pharmacy delivery options, things like that. So they're really kind of rethinking how healthcare works, and instead of maybe like taking time off and getting an appointment with a doctor and going there, this is, hey, stay at home. You can do most of this online. If you need blood work or a prescription, that's going to come to you. Yeah, Amazon Care. I think it's interesting. It's just another area that Amazon is in, from, you know, space to healthcare. They're kind of covering a little bit of everything. But I do think, and a lot of industry watchers have been kind of speculating, what is going to happen to healthcare after this year that we've just been through? Is it kind of forced us to do a lot of things differently? It forced us to do a lot of things over telehealth that perhaps we wouldn't have done before. And so is that going to be lasting? And Amazon is betting that it will. So we will see. As I said, it's just in Washington now. It's going to be rolling out in D.C. and through some other areas, and then moving out from there. So we'll see when that gets piloted here.
Yeah, I guess, you know, Amazon does things fairly well, so it just seems kind of bizarre. I guess they're banking on there being a market for it and that it's not too saturated.
Yeah, and I think that's the big question, is can they really own that space, as so many healthcare startups have kind of popped up. And even pharmacies, we've seen Walgreens and CVS kind of moving into this like in-store clinic model, and really kind of shifting the way we think about like having the family doctor that we go to for a long time. Mm-hmm. This is a much different model. So this is just another drop in that bucket, and we will see how it plays out for Amazon.
Okay. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.